Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough with me, your radio talk show host, Dr. Beverly L. Swanson. A talk show of real people with real stories, real testimonies that will inspire you and me to moving forward into our breakthrough. So glad to have you today. Now we're going to move forward to inspiration, empowerment, and breakthrough with Dr. Beverly L. Swanson.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough. And yes, it's me. I am Dr. Beverly, your radio talk show host. Wonderful to have you on the air this morning, along with my special guest, the featured guest today. Now, you've already heard that this radio broadcast is about real people. Real people sharing real stories about their trials and their tribulations, all that they have gone through, and their victories, so that their faith and what they experienced will encourage each and every one of us to continue moving forward, to trust and have faith, and we too will have the breakthrough that awaits us. Now, let me tell you about our featured guest. Her name is Leticia Jackson, well known as Leticia Action Jackson. And we're going to have her explain exactly what that action is about during the broadcast. Let me tell you about her. She's a fitness expert, International Federation of Bodybuilding and Fitness Professional. She's an author. Leticia Action Jackson also has 12 years of experience in the health and fitness field. She holds a master's degree in public health and a bachelor's degree in exercise science. She also has an AA degree in human performance. She's a certified personal trainer. She's a certified lifestyle weight management specialist and a certified weight loss counselor. She's a veteran of the United States Air Force, yay, and so is Dr. Beverly. And she's a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. Hold on, she's got so much to say, I hope I can get it through without being tongue-tied, ladies and gentlemen. Not done. She's the author of I'm Not a Size Zero, Defining Your Curves While Loving Yourself. Ooh, I love that, because neither is Dr. Beverly. She's empowering women's fitness training book that emphasizes that being fit is not about being a size zero. Rather, it's about being a size healthy. Oh, how I love that. Now, she is a three-time national fitness champion. She's a 2008 fitness Olympian and a top-level fitness professional. Now, she is being featured in over 12 nationally recognized fitness publications, such as, I think you'll recognize these, Oxygen, Muscle and Fitness, Hers, Flex, Ironman, and Muscular Development, and has made multiple television appearances for stations such as Fox 45, she's out of Florida, and ABC 22 and Channel 31. As the go-to fitness expert. Now, over the last 12 years, she has worked as a research assistant, as a college instructor, as a kids instructor at the YMCA, as a fitness consultant, a sports performance coach, a lifestyle and weight management specialist, and certified personal trainer. I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it makes me want to suck it in and sit up straight. But here's why we're also so interested in Leticia today. Today, we're going to discuss that with all these amazing achievements, she's a survivor of domestic violence, and it has become her personal mission to empower both young women and girls to embrace themselves from an inner and an outer perspective. And that's what this broadcast is all about, ladies. Remember, inspiring and encouraging each other. So with that, I'd like to all of you to welcome Miss Leticia Jackson. Leticia, are you there?
I am here, Dr. Beverly, yes.
Oh, it's so awesome to have you. Now, are you chuckling because Dr. Beverly's not a size zero?
No, it's funny, Dr. Beverly. I laugh anytime that I hear somebody say those things about me because those are just things, you know, the true essence of Leticia Action Jackson is totally detached from all those things. And that's why I'm really excited to be on your show today, is to talk about things that don't really make us who we are, but the inside of who we truly are. So I'm excited to be here.
And we're excited to hear. We're so excited to have you on because you're absolutely right. You know, sometimes people look at the outside of us and they think that, oh, my gosh, they're so perfect. They could not have ever experienced anything in life, or I know they've never done anything wrong. And how little does one realize that there is always a journey to greatness, and there is absolutely no one exempt.
Absolutely. I believe as women, we are all guilty, and I believe it's based on the society in which we live in. We are taught if our bodies is a certain way or if our appearance is a certain way and if we have a certain amount of degrees, then that within itself makes us successful and makes us feel great about ourselves. But, you know, as you went down the list of my credentials, I chuckled because those things are so far from who I am today. Now, at one point in time, I was defined by those things. Being a national level competitor, being in magazines both in the United States and Europe, you believe when you see yourself in magazines, I've made it. But on the outside of the pages, when the magazines close, you go home and you don't really feel worthy. You know, you don't feel that you performed your best. So I think it's essential for every woman that's listening to us today is to start looking at herself as not the things that she does, but the characteristics of who she is.
Oh, that is so divinely put, Leticia. Thank you so much. And before we move further, I would like everyone to know in the audience, including our gentlemen. Now, Leticia is going to talk about her life, and she's going to reference ladies and women often because that is her personal plight. But I do want you to understand that it's not just ladies that she's addressing in general. Each and every one of us, whether it be male or female, have had times in our lives where we have to push past the pain and abuse, physical, psychological, emotional abuse, is not just one suffered by ladies by no sense of the matter at all. So as she shares her story, let it encourage each and every one of you that listen to the broadcast and give you the strength and the courage and the power to move forward into your personal greatness, okay? All right. So moving forward, Leticia, and I know you pronounce your name one way. Bear with me. I'm from New Jersey. So as we talk about your life, you know, in 2008 is when you became an Olympian. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, you mentioned to me you placed the first time that you competed. Is that right?
That is correct. So in my sport, Dr. Beverly, the Sinus Olympian or Olympia is equivalent to the Super Bowl for the NFL. At the Olympia, only the best of the athletes in my sport make it there once a year. I became a professional athlete in 2006 when I won a fitness contest in New York City at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center. That placement there qualified me as what is now known as an IFBB fitness pro. I took 2 years off because of my marital situation, and in 2006, when I found myself and a very abusive and mentally draining marriage. When everything happened, and we'll get into that later, I went back to my first love, and my first love was fitness. So as I was going through my healing process in the end of 2007, I said to myself, I am not going to allow myself to be a victim of someone else's evil intent. I took all of that negative energy and I poured it into getting back to fitness and using working out as a vehicle to express my pain. That was probably one of the times in my life where my training sessions were so intense because the negative energy that I had inside of me, I channeled it into energy to focus on my workout. There were days where I'd be in the gym running 3 or 4 miles at a time while crying because it was a part of the healing process. In July 10, 2008, I qualified to compete in the Olympia by placing the top three. I made it to the Olympia September 25th, 2008, and I stood on stage amongst the best in the world. It was my first time ever being at the Olympia, and I had only competed twice to qualify. Now, if you know anything about the sport or if anyone out there knows anything about it, normally people train as a professional in my sport for at least 5 or 6 years before they make it to the Olympia. I made it there my first year on stage. So when I stood there, I stood for more reasons than just getting the body that I got. It was symbolic of freedom. It was symbolic of not allowing the trials to stop me. And it was also symbolic for the women that were currently in the situation that I had gotten out of to show them that, you know, you don't have to be a victim. You can be a victor. So went on to place 8th in the world, got the medals, got the jacket, and more than that, I got my pride back.
Wow. Look at that. And, you know, the interesting thing is, ladies and gentlemen, you know, she's mentioning that she did all of that, and she mentioned the why, you know, what drove her. But all of that was internal. She still did not talk about or what was going on with her personal life and how it was trying to debilitate her and trap her, if you will, to keep her from moving forward in her greatness. She used that as fuel to strive her, unknown to anyone else. So here's the thing. As she said that she was running. She did not say jogging, but running those 3 and 4 miles. And in tears, crying because of what she was experiencing on the inside of her. Now, I have to ask you, up until this time, Ms. Jackson, was your life, I mean, you achieved so much in school, so life had been going well for you before this time, was it not?
Absolutely. I think what's very interesting about my entire situation, the outside of what I was producing did not match the inside of what I was feeling. And sometimes I often even now sit back and ask myself, how did you complete all of these things, but yet you still have these dark, I don't want to say tendencies, but I have these empty, let's use the word empty. I had a lot of empty spaces on the inside. And in order for me to give a clearer picture of that, I have to take that back to my childhood. My parents were probably married about 16, 17 years before they divorced. And I remember being about 13, 14 when my father left home. Upon him leaving, something inside of me said to myself, well, maybe if I was good enough, he would have stayed. And I believe him leaving triggered something inside of me. At that time, I could not identify. But it put me into this cycle of perfectionism. I was chasing perfection, hoping to prove my self-worth. So I believe a lot of the things that I accomplished was driven out of the wrong motivation. I've always been a very driven person, but I believe that that drive was stemmed from I wanted to prove to the world that I was somebody special. So as I was accomplishing all these great things, I made it on the dean's list every year in college, in magazines across the world. I could get a 4-page spread in a magazine, and the only thing I could focus on was why did they use that image? That's not the best image they could have used. Now, the average person would have said, wow, I'm inside of a magazine, and I've got 4 pages, but I was striving for perfection. And for you out there who have dealt with the thought of perfection, you know it's an illusion. So on the outside of my life, Dr. Beverly, yes, I appeared to have everything together. But on the inside of the places that people could not see, I was hurting.
And, you know, you said something that is so very true. You know, as parents, we really must consider everything when we are faced with the possibility of separation or divorce. Our children may not say anything, but here you're hearing now at age 12, which is a very, very critical year for both our young men and our young women, that age 12. It does make a difference. They may not say anything, but emotionally and mentally, the turmoil is so intense that they really truly must be a factor into your decision to see if this final decision is truly the best decision overall for the family. And you all that you mentioned, it sounds like you never felt good enough about yourself after that.
No, I never did. And you know, it's interesting because at the age of 12 or 13, I don't believe people really have an understanding of the molding capabilities of a young mind. And what I mean by that is I went from having a home life where I knew my father was going to be there. We never thought about money. We never thought about the tangible, you know. And when my father left, I saw my mother work two jobs to provide finances for us. And somewhere inside of me, I said, you know, I will never allow this to happen to me. I will never allow myself to get that close to anybody to where they could have such an impact on my life. And my mind became molded to where I'm going to take care of me. I'm going to be successful. So for people out there that are considering divorce or have gone through a divorce and you really haven't had time to heal yourself, really talk to your children. Because I don't believe at 13 years old, I knew how to articulate what was going on the inside of me. It did not display itself on the outside until years later.
That's why it's so important to have shows just like this. So what it does, it opens up our own hearts and our own minds to continue to grow and get information that we can use in every aspect of our lives. And I'm so appreciative of you being so transparent, and that is such excellent advice. You know, it's interesting, you know, you talked about that, and it really is a perfect time to go into your marriage then. So tell us, share with us when you were dating your husband, and how did you meet him?
I met him at one of my favorite places, the gym. No surprise there, right? guilty as charged. When I met him, I was drawn to him. He was very charismatic, very very well spoken, obviously very fit. I distinctly remember the first night I met him at the gym. He and I sat down in the aerobics room, and we spoke for about 4 hours. You know, the conversation was seamless. I was drawn, first of all, to older men. So he mm-hmm. was probably, I was 20, gosh, it seems like it's been so long. I believe I was either 26 or 28, and he was about 10 years older than myself. And I remember feeling safe. I remember saying to myself, there's something that makes me feel safe about this person. But as time went on and months went by, the real him came out. And what I mean by that, when we first meet an individual, I think everyone puts their good foot forward. My mother mm-hmm. has a statement that she often says that a person doesn't change. You just really get to know the real person. So as the months went on, the real person started to show who he was. And that person was very jealous. That person was very consumed with my whereabouts. We were at the time dating long distance, and if he called and I was not available to pick up my phone when he called, I was accused of being out at places I didn't belong, or I was having conversations with men at the gym. So the signs were there. All of the signs were there. But I remember once he asked me to marry him a year into the relationship and the wedding invitations went out, I started to see more and more of the scarier signs. He'd come into town, and if I did not want to go certain places with him, it was because the person whom he accused me of, which was fictitious, was there, and he slammed doors and called me out my name. But I went forward with the marriage, and it was one of those things where I think embarrassment was a part of it. I did not want to tell everyone that I wasn't going to get married because I had already sent everyone the invitations. Pride had a lot to do with it, but somewhere inside of me, if I'm very honest, I knew something bad was going to happen. Now, are the signs and the things leading up to it indicating that, or is it just God's inner voice telling me not to do it? So, the signs were there. They were so red. If I would have listened, I would not have found myself where I was.
Yes, well, and these are the things that happened to us, though. You know, I remember you sharing to me, Miss Jackson, that you wanted to be loved so bad after your father, left the family, you divorced. And, you know, it's interesting that you were attracted to older men. You said that he was 10 years older. When you want to be loved so badly and you truly miss an embracement of our father, we do tend to seek someone much older because in our minds it simulates that, you know, that is that father figure and we should be able to trust them, they'll comfort us and so forth. And that's what happens a lot to us as women and as those of us that have survived divorces with our families. It comes out later. You're right. You are absolutely right. Though our minds are shaped by our experiences, especially in those ages between 12 and 13. So
absolutely.
You don't want to see, yes, you don't want to see anything bad about them in the beginning. It's comfort. It's a comfort that you've missed. It's like having a comfort food after, you know, eating lightly for so long, and now you have beef stew, and it's like, oh, my God, I want another bowl. More.
Yes.
So, you know, don't judge. Definitely listen. Listen to what she's saying. Listen to what she's explaining and expressing, and take a look at her situations today and make sure that our alignment with the person in our lives are truly love and not an infatuation or, as she has mentioned earlier, not a delusion. So here you go. You saw all the red flags. You're a very intelligent woman.
I saw all the red flags.
Yes, you did. And you heard the voice. The voice that always tries to rescue us. Our Father is an amazing God. He's given us the Holy Spirit, the voice within us.
Yes.
That tries
yes.
to help us. But we always have a choice. And so you got married. And how was things after that?
Well, I can tell you this from the time, let's go back a little bit further than that. My mother and I are very close, and for months leading up to it, my mother was very uncomfortable with the decision that I made to marry him. Now, she had met him a few times, but a mother knows her daughter. And on many occasions, she would say to me, Letitia, I believe this is a wrong decision. But being an adult, she obviously had to allow me to make my own choice. She chose not to come to the wedding. So I think right there, yeah, I think within itself, from someone that's so close to you, not supporting you in one of what's supposed to be one of the biggest moments in your life, I believe that was indicating also where my mindset was at. So we got married on December 26th, the day after Christmas, and on December 27th, we moved to Boston, his hometown. Now, probably within a week of being there, the obvious pattern of what was going to occur started. It was very cold in December. Our heating had gone out in our home, and I called maintenance to come fix it, and he was very, very against anybody being in the house when he was not there. So letting maintenance in that day triggered him, and I was called, you know, very vulgar names, accused of sleeping with people that were there to fix our home. So it literally started the first week. And I distinctly remember saying to myself, Letitia, what have you done? you know, we go out to the grocery store and maybe somebody look in my direction and the response from him was, oh, do you know him too? Or if I went to the gym and did not call him upon arrival, upon leaving, upon heading back home, I was living in a cage. And I remember the very laughter that I had and the smile that I had. I remember praying one night and saying, God, please get me out of this. You know, I remember being dropped off at a train station because I did not agree to go with him to an event one night. He dropped me off at a train station in Boston by myself to find my own way back home. So the mental abuse started first, and then when I would fight back for myself, the verbal abuse, and then the physical abuse. It was very scary. Yeah, it was very scary. And at the time, no one knew what was going on. You know, when you're perceived as having it all together, shame sits and talks to you. Well, you can't tell them what's going on. You're smart. You're educated. You're beautiful. You're an athlete. You're all these things. But the reality is you're broken and you're abused and you're destroying. You are being destroyed every day. So nobody knew what was going on.
And that is exactly what happens. You're being destroyed little by little every single day until the goal is to deplete one so much that they have literally nothing left, and all they can do is walk through this relationship numb. All of them gone completely and left to nothing. And this is not God's best. That goes without being said. It is not God's best. And look how he separated her from her family. He moved her completely away to Boston and had her all to himself, where she was entrapped, or like she said, caged with no way out. But God.
That's right.
But
that's right.
God. You mentioned to me that you had,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to make sure, don't lose your thought. I just want to make sure you also tell our audience about, when you're done, the conversation that you had with Jesus. So do go on.
Yes, you, as you're speaking about isolation, one of the things that I, when I was finally healed, and we'll get into that later, but as I started to learn more about the characteristics of people who are the insulters or the domestic violence person, whoever, and sometimes it's women as well that are abusive. So let's not forget to mention that as well. But one of the characteristics of a person who is the predator of the relationship, who's giving the violence or doing the violence, is there's a few things about them. They're very manipulative. They're very controlling, and they have the ability to isolate. I remember my mom saying to me, Leticia, he's going to take you there away from your family because he wants to control you. When you're young, you're in love, you say things as, well, no, we're just building a family. It's just time for us. You know, he just wants me there so we can spend time together growing. Those are all lies that we tell ourselves. So if there's someone out there now that's in a relationship and you see that the person that you call your spouse or your partner manipulates you to believe, well, I called you out of your name because of what you did, or I would not be upset with you if you do what I tell you to do, that's a form of control. And that's what he did. You know, there were times when we get in arguments after church. I distinctly remember an event where we went to church. One of the ushers hugged me, and I hugged him from the side. After church, my husband called me every name in the book and told me that I was a slut. And he said to me, if you ever hug another man, I will kill you. So don't take lightly what you hear. If someone's threatening you, whether it's verbally or physically, get out. It's that severe. You know, don't allow the little things to become big things, because the reality is I could have been killed.
That's right. The mouth speaks what is in the heart of a man. So you do want to take what they say seriously. Please tell us about the conversation you had with Jesus.
The conversation I had with Jesus, wow. So leading, I will probably say the incident happened September 17th, and I ended up leaving 2 days later to Ohio, where I was going to my sister and my brother-in-law's house. At the time, you can imagine I was very, I don't want to choose the word depressed. I was very angry, very bitter, very upset with myself for allowing such a thing to happen. And that's sometimes what abusers do. You're left feeling as if you were the reason why it happened. 2 months went by, and no matter what I said to anybody and no matter how many times people try to console me, nothing that they said to me could heal me. The pain was so real. I remember one night leaving the gym, pulling up to my sister's house, and screaming in the car, "God, take me. This pain is too real." And it really wasn't the domestic violence that was the real pain. The real pain was, why did I not love myself enough to realize that I was better than that? Why, for so many years, have I not felt good enough? I want to show you something very interesting before I tell you about the dream or what the Lord said to me. The night that my ex-husband was arrested, this shows you how broken I was. I called the police station, and they told me that he had been arrested for attempted murder because the night before he choked me. He was arrested for attempted murder. I asked the police on the phone, "Is he okay?" The police officer paused. He says, "Ma'am, did this man not put his hands around your neck last night and try to choke you?" And I say, "Yes, sir." And he says, "You're asking how he's doing?" Yeah. I was more concerned about him. Yes, I was concerned about the very person that stood in the closet and put both of his hands around my neck to where I passed out, wondering how he was doing. Now, one can hear that and say, "Are you serious?" Yes, that goes to show you how broken I was.
Yes.
How somebody tried to take the very breath out of my body that God had given me, and I was concerned about him. So as I was at my sister's home in Ohio, I had to get real with me. And I cried out to God, and I said, "God, I'm hurting so bad. If you don't take this pain away, I want you to take my life." And knowing that God is the creator of life, that goes against his word. You know, so he had to heal me. And I remember crying. I remember yelling. I remember screaming. I remember beating things. And one night I had a dream. I was running down where I lived, and it was a stop sign. And as I'm running, flashes of fire were falling on the side of me. Now, nothing would touch me, but they were all around me. As I was running from the fire, just swarms of water started to come around me. But the interesting thing was, no matter how much fire or water came around me, none of it could touch me. And I'm running to the stop sign, and there were hands that had a box of tissue that reached out to me and said, "It's over."
Yeah.
Couldn't see a face. All I saw were hands and a box of tissue saying, "It's over." So what was revealed to me in my spirit, I went through the fire. I went through the pain. I went through all of that stuff. But God was telling me, "It's over. I'm healing you. I'm going to heal you." And as I was running, nothing touched me. The fire and the water could not touch me. So even though I was going through the fire and the storms of my life at that time, nothing could touch me. That was the hand of God protecting me. And he told me,
yes,
it's over. And that night, it was as if the bitterness, the anger, all the things that were inside of me were released. And I had to forgive. I said, "Lord God, I forgive him for what he's done to me." And when I forgave him, literally, I began to heal. Mm-hmm.
Look at that. And yes, as a dream interpreter, I can tell you, in that dream, the fire was the storm, was everything that you were going through that was after you to attack you, to destroy you. But when the swarms of water, and water always represents Christ Jesus,
mm-hmm,
the water came through to put out the fire that was around you. And as you ran through, they were giving you tissues. The angels were handing you tissues. And the God was himself telling you that it is over, because he has sent his spirit, his son, to destroy the flames that were licking at you and beating at you, trying to destroy you. And you, it was over for you. No longer cry. That is how beautiful our Father is. That is how much He loves us to this day. And you know, as I listened to her share, so articulate and so transparent, such an amazing heart. As I listened to her share, I'm always in awe of how our Father, who is God, is always with us. She's still in her right mind, ladies and gentlemen. She has all her hair. She's still in her right mind. She is still has a heart for people. She's not walking around with bitterness or hate. She doesn't hate men. Look at that. Look at, if it wasn't for her faith, if it wasn't for her ability to pray and speak to the Lord and hear Him, there is no way she could have made it through that which she went through. But I have to remind you of what she said. She had to pray for him and she had to forgive him. When you do that, you open up the door for the Lord to come in and turn things around to benefit you. It's when we hold on to bitterness or anger or hatred or unforgiveness that he can't move in our lives. And look how she's sharing her story to help others. This is what it's all about. It's not just about what we've done or what we have acclaimed or even how famous we may be or how others may look up to us. If we're not sharing the journey of the pain of getting to that point, then our lives really does not have value. The value is when you can give back and help someone else move up to in their greatness that the Lord has blessed them with. Now, this is not over. There's still so much more to share. We have to share her next relationship after her divorce. We have to talk about how in the midst of all this that's going on, she literally worked and exercised and put her mindset to success and greatness in her field and her craft, and how she had come to levels where you cannot imagine. She also has a book to tell you about and how that book is helping others as well. There's so much more that we're also going to have to put this broadcast into, if she will agree with us, and we're going to put her on the spot because she's on the air, to do a part to do a part two, a continuation of this phenomenal story about how she's moved past the pain and torment of abuse, both physical and mental and emotional. This dynamic Olympian and a wonderful woman, an intelligent, articulate specimen of greatness. Will you do that for us?
Absolutely, no question about it. Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. It's one of those things where I, for months, and I know that we'll make this a part two, but I remember when I was in Ohio and going through my process of healing, the Lord spoke to me to write a book. As you can imagine, I dodged that, the voice, which is the spirit. I remember for months not being able to sleep and leaving church one day. An elder comes over to me, not someone that I would ever, I really don't divulge and did not divulge my situation with the people at the church because I just felt ashamed. But he tells me, Sister Jackson, I could be wrong, but I want to obey the Lord. And the Lord told me to tell you to do what he told you to do. Now, I had not shared with anyone that the Lord told me to write a book. So I looked at the gentleman and I said, thank you, sir. At that point, I went home and I said, God, I don't know why you're chasing me. I don't know what you want from me, but I'm tired of running. And I said, what do you want? And he's like, open your heart. And I was like, open my heart. What does that mean? Tell your story. And I want you to be honest and I want you to be transparent. And I'm like, the audacity, are you serious? You mean I really have to tell women how there were times in my life that I was in a relationship and would beg a man to stay and I remember a particular relationship. Gentleman picked a fight with me and was leaving my home. And Dr. Beverly, I remember grabbing his leg. I was on my knees, grabbing his leg, begging and pleading for him not to leave me that night. And he said, open yourself. Transparency is where you're going to heal. And the Spirit told me, he talked to me very, very gently, and he said to me, pain has taught you things that joy never could.
Yes.
And I was like, what?
Wow.
And so I opened my heart, and I remember I would get on the laptop, and I would say, God, I've never wrote a book. I said, but I have a story inside of my heart. You lead me. And Dr. Beverly, the words would just flow. I mean, it was almost as if it was a cup of unending words just flowing and flowing. And I know it was just him. And I was a vessel that was willing to open myself up. And even now when I go back and read the book that he allowed me to write, there's a portion in the book called My Journey. And it's so painted so perfectly. I mean, there's no detail left out. And that's because I told God, I'll be honest. I'll be transparent, and whatever people think about me, that's not my responsibility. I'm going to do what you led me to do, and you're going to take care of the rest. And since the release of this book, May of this year, I cannot tell you how many women have emailed me, how many women have said thank you. Thank you for doing this, because nobody else could have done that. Now, somebody else could have wrote a book, but my story could only be told by me. So
that's
we're
right.
telling my story. That's right. That's right.
That's right. And each and every one of us has a story in us. And I always tell everyone, everyone needs to write a book, because each and every
yes.
one of us have a story to tell of accomplishments and how we push through in our faith and not give up, so that it encourages others to do exactly the same. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to push for tomorrow, Wednesday, the 17th of December, the exact same time for part two. I will confirm that with Ms. Jackson. I want to share a quote with you that she wrote, and it says, the true essence of a woman's beauty isn't found in the size of her hips, rather in the size of her dreams and her passion for life. Again, that is a quote by Coach Jackson, and I want to thank her for being our guest today. I hope that she has imparted encouragement in each and every one of you. She has in me. And I encourage you all to come back and listen to part two. There is a continuation of the story, and the best is still yet to come. Ah, Leticia, I love you so much. Thank you for being on with us today. And we look forward to number two. So don't you forget a thing. Oh, I also want to leave you with this. You can go to her website in the interim at www.laticiajackson.com. Find out a little more about her. Order her book. She's on Facebook, and she has a business phone number at 850-696-8069. But more importantly, I want you to go to that website at laticiajackson.com. And read about her, so that when you come back tomorrow, you're all set and ready to move forward and to flow in her journey. So thank you so much, all of you that are on the air live with me today and those that listen in the archive. And you see, real people sharing real stories about their journeys, their trials, their tribulations, their victories, and their great faith. We shall see you tomorrow for this special portion of Leticia Jackson, Action Jackson. We'll get to that too. Tomorrow, Wednesday, same time, same station. We'll see you tomorrow, and I love you more. Thank you, Leticia.
Thank you, Dr. Beverly, and thank you for being such an inspiration for me and encouragement. So I love you as well.
Oh, thank you. Now that's a blessing for Dr. Beverly. Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you tomorrow.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Have a great day.
Thank you.
God's Desert Flower.